Greetings, I'm Trevor Dan, and in this episode of our weekly podcast, news about the forthcoming radio festival from Radio Academy Chair Chris Burns, CMA Chair Dom Chambers on the state of the community radio sector, radio moments as always, but first, the annual Next Radio Conference, organised by Matt Deegan and James Cridland.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Next Radio is the conference with no panels, where all the sessions last either 9 or 18 minutes. It's a fascinating insight into the creativity of our industry. There are no management bigwigs showing off and scoring points over their competitors. It was held in the hallowed portals of the Royal Institution in London on Monday, and the trusty RTP mic was there to hear from delegates and speakers, including presentation coach Valerie Geller, 3CR's breakfast host Ian Lee with his producer Catherine Boyle, Rupert Brunn on binaural sound, you'll love that, and first, backstage and keeping our voices down, Five Live's Jono. Jonathan Wall, controller, BBC Radio 5 Live, 5 Live Extra. We've got to learn how to deliver a message for the whole of the industry when we do our comms.
I just think we can get battered sometimes, can't we, at radio for, oh, Radio 1's done this and that. It doesn't really tell the story of Radio 1 YouTube through the roof. I mean, I mentioned everyone there. I mentioned commercial radio deliberately because it was a plea to good friends of mine, you know, like, you know, Liam at Talk, for example, but all the guys. And say, look, let's have a get together and let's be quite bullish about what does success look like for all of us in a year's time. And maybe there's one or two little tricks that we share with each other. Look, I'm not daft. We're not gonna get all of Talk Sports secrets online about some of the things they do, but let's have a play together and be a bit more bold about it.
You talked a lot about playing, you think of digital as being a play space. I was interested in what you were saying about how in a sense it's easier to get radio listeners to go online than it is to get online people to engage with your radio signal.
Well, I just think, Trevor, we're probably all of us leaders now are probably from a generation where that's the way we think about it. And I suppose I was struck at the last radio when Sports Extra was through the roof. My online's a record, my Five Live was a little bit disappointing. I was thinking, well, hang on a minute, are they doing enough for me on Sports Extra and online to be bringing back into the main channel? Because, as you know, you might only need somebody for half an hour a week to give you a little bit of a boost on a breakfast show or sport. But more importantly, that you're opening them up to the riches, aren't you, of your schedule? So I think it's just something I need to take away with my team. It's just something I wanted to land today, that I don't think enough of us are thinking like that on the main channels.
Chris Price, what were you doing listening to the Foo Fighters for 24 hours?
I was asking myself that several times over the... But by the time I got to about hour number 16, I did wonder. It started off as a bit of an experiment. So I wrote this piece when Zayn left Radio 1 in February to go to Apple. I wrote a piece called Five More Things That Internet Radio Should Steal From Broadcast. And I kind of felt like if I was going to tell internet radio where it was going wrong, that I needed this kind of laboratory conditions service comparison. So I thought, well, I'll just start listening. I'll do 2 hours of each of the major smart radio services out there. And I realized that I was looking down the wrong end of about 24 hours listening. And it was a very, very revealing exercise.
What I picked up was the algorithms are so good, but we still need some humanity.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think the pendulum has definitely swung from algorithms back towards human curation a bit. I mean, that's not to discount algorithms altogether, but I think that debate, the humans versus algorithms debate, is kind of over now. We know that it's a combination of the two, and that, you know, as I think some of my slides in the presentation showed, if left to their own devices, algorithms don't do a great job. It's, you know, when humans put their personal touch on it that we get that amazing kind of sweet spot between the two.
You were talking about how we as broadcasters have perhaps been a bit slow in offering a personalised offer.
Yeah.
Do you get any sense that we're moving in that direction? Do we understand that now?
I do. I mean, I mentioned the fact that BBC Music is certainly announced its ambitions, if not its kind of intention. I think it's probably a bit early to say that it's definitely going to happen. I'd gather the BBC Trust has yet to endorse the ambition for Playlister to become a streaming service. But I think that, you know, this idea that the BBC can hold its listeners within the walls of its carefully curated and cultivated gardens just for a little bit longer before sending them off to the competition, because increasingly that's what smart radio services are these days for the BBC, and increasingly they are platforms, and there's no reason why the BBC shouldn't be streaming music, just as it has radio platforms, TV platforms, everything else. Streaming is a platform now, and I think it's absolutely right that it should personalize the content that it licenses as well as the content that it originates.
It's always quite scary talking to Valerie Geller because you know that she's reviewing your performance as you do it. So how am I doing so far?
The talented Trevor Dan. What is so great about you is when you do an interview, you actually are interested in the answers. You're an amazing listener. I get the feeling when I talk to you that even though you have your own ideas and you have life on the bone, you know, you really understand what the business is, you're very open to new ideas. You're hungry for new ideas. You care about radio. The first time I met you, I understood that you love this business and you love radio. And so I could just feel my heart open to you because that we share that love of what this magical medium is.
I'm very grateful for your comments, Valerie, but this isn't an interview about me. It's actually about you and the talk that you just gave. This is a great conference, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
Did you feel, I know this is a terrible old cliche, but there's a lot of love in the room. People were absolutely, you know, listening so intently to what you were saying.
You know, it's really not about radio. It's about life and human struggle. And it's about entertaining and informing the public. Radio is just how we get it out there. It's life with a microphone. So it really has very little to do with radio per se. It has to do with connecting and having fun and getting through life. And life
you
is absurd.
Are what you say, yeah. Are you? You stand there and you engage us and you tell good stories. And all the things you say we should do on the radio, that's what you do in front of an audience at a conference.
Well, I also believe in this with my heart and soul. It is my life's work. It's not a job for me. It's what I am. It's what I'm about. And if you can't model it, I think it's very, very hard. You know, if you're going to learn the piano and your piano teacher can't demonstrate to you how to play it the right way, it's really hard to learn it. But it's based on three things, and those three things never change. Tell the truth, make it matter, and never be boring. And that's the core of the work. And then all the rest of the work is how you get to do those three things. To come back to London and sit down with Clive Bull or Ian Lee or people that I have worked with who, you know, come up to you, or some guy from South Africa who goes, Valerie came here 15 years ago and now we're number one. They did the work. You give them the model and the tools, but they did the brick laying and they did the work. So there's so many people who have achieved promise, and it fills my heart with joy, and I'm really proud of them and really happy and honored to be back, you know.
Sorry to disturb the loving, Ian Lee, Catherine Boyle. Great presentation. Well, don't you think you're a bit too kind of close to each other to be a proper producer-presenter relationship?
Well, this is what we were talking about, is that I think that the producer and the presenter is, I think it's the integral relationship to the output, and it gets overlooked. As we said, I was perhaps one of these presenters who thought the show was all about me, me, me. And I've worked with producers where the show's them and the presenter is just their mouthpiece and does what they're told.
Don't you find, though, Catherine, that you can get too close to Ian? I mean, surely you have managers above you saying, stop him doing that.
No, I really don't. I honestly don't. We're really lucky in the manager we have at the moment seems to understand the dynamic, if you will, and also the fact that I can say things to Ian that no one else can and get away with it. And I think that's helpful to management.
How handy is it that you have also been a presenter?
I think I know what he needs as a result of having not had it in the past, you know. So if I look through, I remember looking through the window and not seeing any eye contact from my producer, and she looked like she wanted to be somewhere else. I never give him that, you know. Hopefully you always feel like there's someone on the other end of the safety rope.
Yeah, I guess what's the answer? Is it yes? You're not written a script for me, so I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I can't freestyle.
You've had your troubles with local radio management.
Oh, I've been sacked loads of times, if that's what you're referring to, Trevor.
I'm
yes.
sort of yes, dancing career, around yes. that, yes, yes. yes. What's different this time? Is it mainly Catherine?
Do you know what? It's two things. It's Catherine knows how to rein me in, because sometimes, you know, in the past, I have maybe been a little bit of a firebrand, but Catherine is excellent at kind of managing me and helping the show go in the way. I have to say my boss, Laura, at Three Counties, is brilliant, because our show sticks out, I think, in the BBC local radio kind of catalogue. It sticks out like a sore thumb. And I think it takes a very brave programme controller, head of a station, to put something like that out there. And, you know, Laura, she backs us. She backs us all the way and lets us do our little things. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't work. But I think only once has she said, I'm not keen on you doing that.
But then she didn't say no.
No, she didn't say no. And after that, she said, OK, I was wrong on that one.
Was that the request to be interviewed by me?
That was it, yeah. No, we're really well looked after at BBC Three Counties, very much so, I think.
And do you drive?
Jeff, let's be honest. Do you drive?
Yes, I do.
No, hang on, let me finish the sentence. Do you drive?
Yes.
No, let me finish.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, and when I go through the village, they push you along to go faster.
Okay, let me finish this. Jeff, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
Hang on. Jeff, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
I know. Hang on. I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, only certain journeys. Yeah, because I'm 80 years old.
Good for you. Well done, fella. But, Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, I do.
I know. There's more coming.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, I do.
I know you do.
Yes, and I've only had one accident in all my time.
Well, I hope you're all right. But, Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yeah.
No, hang on. Hang on. Do you drive?
Yes.
I know you do.
Yeah.
There's more coming.
Do you know what is such a joy? We played some clips, and doing this live show that I'm doing, I'm playing clips of radio. And what is nice, radio is, I tend to find, a very insular, solo, generally for me, a solo experience. It's in my car, it's in my bed at night, or maybe there'll be a couple of other people. But to hear it, I mean, how many people in there? 100, 150 people laughing out loud at the radio or gasping at amazement at something inappropriate a counsellor has said during the interview. I don't know what it is. It's exciting, it's thrilling, it's rewarding. It's a really unique experience to hear an audience enjoying radio en masse. Do you know what I mean?
It's an affirmation that we called it right, you know, because we can feel that we're going the right way. We can feel, we hear it the way we hear it, and you can only hope that that's the way it comes across at home, and it would seem that it does.
Hi, my name's Phil Stock. I'm a producer at Radio 1 and One Extra. I really enjoyed the next radio conference. It's one of those things to come along and meet people that I often see comments attributed to and just see people sharing their expertise from the UK radio scene and around the world. And I've just seen Ian Lee and his producer, and fantastic, really insightful. And I'm an admirer of their work. And when I come to places like this, I can see and meet people like that.
It's always a pleasure to have a little bit of geek talk at a conference like this. And who better than Rupert Brun? Rupert, ex-BBC, now running your own company. Why should we be interested in binaural? Isn't stereo and surround sound enough?
I think we should be interested in binaural because a lot of people are listening to our content using headphones these days. And if you listen to something that's been balanced in stereo for loudspeakers on headphones, then anything that's pan centre is right in the middle of your head. And we're used to that. But as soon as you've heard something that's been produced as binaural sound, where you listen on headphones and you get sound all around you, you just realise how much better and more natural sounding it is. So I think that's why, because it'll just make your content sound better for everybody consuming it on headphones.
Given that a lot of DAB stations now are in glorious mono, doesn't that rather suggest that the consumer is less interested in this techie stuff than you are?
A lot of consumers are less interested, and let's be honest, if you've got a radio in your kitchen and you're listening to a station whilst you're preparing the dinner, then mono's perfectly good. I'm not knocking that at all. All of these things have their place, and it depends on the listener, the environment they're in, and the content. And if you've got content that benefits from sounding as if it's all around you. Say you're walking around a pop festival, talking to people about what's going on at that festival, having that whole experience inside your head listening on headphones, I think, is nothing like as good as hearing it binaurally, where you get the pop festival all around you as you're walking through it.
And one thing I did learn from your presentation is that you can buy a piece of kit which will transform your ordinary stereo into a binaural signal.
Yes, you no longer have to walk around with microphones stuck in your ears all day to create binaural content. You can create content using normal microphone techniques and normal production techniques, produce something as surround sound, and then use a plug-in on your favourite audio editing system to create binaural sound from that. And the plugins, some of them are free, some of them cost hundreds and hundreds of pounds. I use one that's about €80, and it's good enough for me, and it lets me, you know, just play, have fun, and put on a pair of headphones and start panning stuff around my world.
That was Rupert Brunin.
Stereo.
Without these two guys, we wouldn't have had today Matt Deegan, James Cridland. How do you think it went, the fifth Next Radio?
I thought it was great. I always think it's the best one ever. I think this year, very smooth, from a boring organisational process, very smooth, and everyone seemed to have a lovely time. Some really interesting speakers from a whole variety of different topics, and you never quite know how they're going to hang together until they're on stage performing.
Highlights for you, James?
I thought it was just the range of people. You know, not everything was up and bubbly and friendly and happy. You know, there were some things which made you really think, and there were some very sad things to hear as well. And I think it was just that range that I really enjoyed.
After 5 years of this, What are we noticing about the trend of radio? What's going on in our industry? Is it up or are we still on the way down?
I think there are people who grapple with the future and there are those who ignore it. And I think one of the things we see today actually is a lot of people doing things, thinking about how that went and deciding to evolve it or change it. I thought Tim Cocker, previously the XFM Manchester Breakfast Show, did a really honest bit about video and the successes you can get from it and how tough it is. And I thought that was a very honest, modern way to think about something that everyone just talks about.
I love the Facebook stuff because too often we look at Facebook and we think it's a black box. We don't know what goes on inside. We don't know how to get our messages out there. We don't know what to be doing. And actually seeing some of those concrete things that we should be doing and those numbers at the end, you know, that was really interesting. So I really enjoyed that.
Are you putting all the sessions up online again?
Yes, yeah, so they're being edited as we speak. We've had a room out the back where all the video has been processed, so we can hopefully try and get it up relatively quickly in the next week or so.
And it would be very remiss of me, James, not to ask you about why the hell you're going to live in Brisbane.
There's nothing wrong with Brisbane, Trevor. It's beautiful and warm and sunny. I'm going there because my other half is from there. My daughter will get a fantastic schooling there as well. We've got family and friends there as well.
But she'll grow up with an Australian accent, James.
Yeah, she will, but there's not much you can do about that. That was a dreadful Australian accent. I feel hugely embarrassed.
You will be back for this next year, won't you?
I
promise.
I'll be back for Next Radio next year, and I'll also be at Radio Days Europe as well, and at the Rain Summit, which is here on the 9th of November.
Well, thank you very much, James, for everything you've done for the radio business, and particularly co-promoting this. Thank you, Matt.
No worries.
It's been lovely being here. And
what was your highlight of the day?
My highlight of the day was lunch.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Still to come on this podcast, David Lloyd's Radio Moments. But let's head off now to Luton, where the Community Media Association held their annual conference last weekend. I met up with keynote speaker Chris Burns, who's head of group operations at BBC Radio and also the new chair of the Radio Academy. But first, the CMA's leader, Don Chambers. In the last decade, his organisation has downsized from more than 30 full-time staff to just one.
I think the CMA is a sort of almost a microcosm of what is the challenges in community radio in general. Because if you look at local radio, something I know, Trevor, you know a lot about, you've basically got three sectors. You've got the commercial, you've got the BBC local radio network, and then you've got community radio. So there are massive challenges. We are the only sector that has no funding strategy. Clearly, the BBC, much in the news at the moment, has a funding strategy. Clearly, commercial radio is about advancing identifying an audience, returning that audience to advertisers and sponsors for the benefit of shareholders. That's business, right? That is commercial. We haven't got a strategy. And so I think the CMA needs to be at the heart of how we create a strategy. And I think you're going to be hearing a lot more about this in the next few months. But we cannot do this as the CMA if the CMA itself isn't around. So the first thing to do is, rather than look at the splinters in other eyes around the country, let's look at the plank in our own or notice it. So what we've achieved at the CMA is perhaps slimming us down as we've introduced better business practices to ensure that we're a robust organisation that can grow itself. And that will, of course, be good for members because we'll find more ways of supporting our members and indeed the sector.
What help do you need in an ideal world from Ofcom to kind of liberalise the way in which a community station can do business?
Well, it's interesting that, because I think there have been some compliance issues. It's interesting and quite right that those operating in the community radio sector are operating under the same broadcasting code and the same compliance that paid and highly trained operatives in the BBC and commercial sectors. So I think there is some issues around compliance, and I think the CMA needs to be at the forefront working with Ofcom to how we can make that process whilst maintaining a sort of appropriate level, but how we might make it easier. And we are in discussions with Ofcom. Well, the way they're putting it is, you know, when commercial radio arrived, sort of 40-odd years ago, it had huge kind of reporting and monitoring strictures. And then that did, as you say, liberalise as that sector matured. And I think the same is happening with our sector. The most important thing, and this is the conversation we are having with Ofcom, is that we safeguard our sector. Nothing wrong. In fact, it is to be encouraged to have commercial initiatives and revenue in our sector. But we must also safeguard the social worth, the social gain of what community radio achieves. That is at the heart of why we are different from the other sectors, and we need to safeguard that. There's a balance to be found, and we are talking strongly with Ofcom about that.
The key word in our sector at the moment is partnership. We're hearing it a lot from the BBC in light of Charter Review. We heard it from Chris Burns, not just about the BBC, but in her role at the Radio Academy. Partnerships. Now, tell me about how you're getting on with the BBC in terms of partnerships with the BBC local stations.
Yeah, we have had a memorandum of understanding with the BBC for some years. In general, I think the approach to the BBC has to be collaborative from our point of view. I think they can offer us a huge amount, but crucially, we can offer them a lot as well. It is not about, and I think some managing editors think it is, but it is not just about us wanting to be trained in a BBC style. There's many reasons people are practicing radio in the community sector, and BBC style broadcast journalism is only one of them. Also, people aspiring to the professional sectors, commercial and BBC, are not always the reason why they're in our sector. So, you know, there's a real love and pride in what we're doing on a hyper-local level and grassroots broadcasting, of course, empowering voices that you're not hearing on those other networks. I think the BBC, you know, if I was a BBC employee, I probably wouldn't be phrasing it this, but in a general retreat from localism, I think that is where the relationship lies. And actually, I spoke to David Holdsworth yesterday, and the conversation more or less ended on, I said, I'm going to take, you know, some thoughts to the conference about how we can develop this. And he said, ask them what we need to be buying in. You know, and I think that's really quite a specific request for information that CMA is going to deliver back on.
Just one last thing. You must listen to and visit more community stations than anyone. Some of them are really good, Dom, but do you know what? Some of them aren't. How do we make the sector better?
I think it's not so much about the broadcasting offer, because the theory of community radio is that it's really an outlet for specific communities. And those communities will find resources and deliver what it wants. And sometimes there's tensions in that, and sometimes, like in the instance of Summer Valley FM, it's working very well. And I know that there's many other examples of that. To my mind, though, it's really about the business model. Because if that is got right, then you are going to facilitate the empowering of those voices and those communities. And I think the biggest challenge of our sector, not what everyone else is saying, funding, 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 yeah, it is, what are we going to do with the funding? That's really crucial. And we answer that question, we will get more funding in. And
well,
I'm
just going to interrupt and say, what I was thinking about, really, was the number of stations that you hear who do their community programming and do it very well, but put it out in the evening, put it out at the weekends, and all day long seem to ape commercial radio at its dullest, you know, just recycling the same records over and over again. Is there something that, as a sector, you could do to stop that?
Well, each radio station has key commitments, and those are monitored by Ofcom. And if you're not honouring those key commitments, and those are the things that you say you're going to do in the community, which gave you a licence in the first place. And there have been instances when Ofcom have pulled them up, saying, actually, we don't think you are delivering these quite to the...
But isn't some of this because one of the key commitments that Ofcom insists on is being live, whereas actually being live is not as important as being local. So pre-recorded programmes being used during the day would actually sometimes deliver your key commitment more than just a guy with a box of records.
I think there are ways of keeping audiences engaged, even if you're volunteer, because don't forget we are broadly a volunteer-based sector. So sometimes, and it's interesting you're talking about the daytime, because sometimes volunteers aren't available in the day because they've got to get on in the important business of paying for their families and their mortgages. So there's some cases people are more available in the evenings and the weekends. I think there are other ways of engaging audiences during the day, and you know, the the stations that are applying time and resource and effort into that are the ones that are going to develop more audiences, which actually leads to funding solutions.
Well, we wish you very well, and thanks for having us at the conference today, Don.
It's been a real pleasure. Nice to see you, Trevor.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
The keynote speaker at the CMA conference is Chris Burns from the BBC, and most particularly on this occasion, the chair of the Radio Academy. A very spirited and upbeat talk, Chris, about the need for partnerships.
Yes, absolutely. Because I mean, I've said this a number of times now, but I think that one of the things that we want the Radio Academy to be is a one-stop shop for people who want to get into this industry or just are passionate about it, want a job, or they just want to kind of share the experience. But we can't do that on our own. We need to work with all the other various groups that are involved. And I think the best way of doing that is as a partnership. You know, just sitting in the room today, listening to Bill talk, listening to Dom, and then some of the questions afterwards, you see the great passion that is there. And people want to be involved in all sorts of ways. And wouldn't it be great if we can work hand in hand and just do that? So I am upbeat about the Radio Academy. It's going to be different. It's going to be challenging. I'm not going to say we're always going to agree with each other, because I think there are some things that the Radio Academy will want to do on their own. Likewise, the CMA will want to do on their own. But where we can come together and we can find things where we can actually, I suppose, give more power to each other, then we should do that.
How are you doing with funding? I talked to Roger Cutsforth, the new MD, a couple of weeks ago. I know it's the biggest issue for you, really. Are the BBC on side? Are all the patrons on side as they always were?
All the patrons at the moment are on side. I mean, I think we would be foolish if we just assumed, well, they'll carry on being on side. We need to demonstrate what our worth is. And I think the way actually we can do that is almost by saying, well, look, support us, and actually we will also help support the whole of the industry, and we will come together, which is not to say that we're going to try and take money away from other people. That's not what we're about. But actually, look what you're giving then to the whole of the sector, rather than just the Radio Academy, if you like.
You talked in your remarks earlier about how you have worked for the BBC, both different, you know, parts of it, local and national, and also for commercial radio. Yeah. How important now do you think community radio is, you know, as a contributor to the whole idea of UK radio broadcasting?
I think it's very important, because I think, you know, what it shows is the wonderful thing about radio now, and you and I have both been around long enough.
Too long.
No, never too long, Trevor, never too long. But we've both been around for a fair few years, and actually, when we started working, it was quite difficult. You know, the technology was quite hard. You had to have a fair amount of money to set up a radio station. And there was a lot of regulation and so forth around it. And we've still got those regulations there now. But it's much easier to do it now. It's much more flexible. And actually, there is a sense of localness that you want, and that sense of community that people derive, because we're not necessarily connected all the time with our families, because we may move around geographically for work or whatever it happens to be. So to be really rooted in your community through a station, it's just a great thing to do. You know, the thing, and I know I talked about this today, but the thing about radio for me is it offers companionship and portability. That's its unique thing.
And I guess while commercial radio is becoming more dominated by syndicated stations, community radio is, by definition, in the community. That's going to be one of its great strengths.
It is going to be one of its strengths. I mean, everybody has to find their own way of doing things. And, you know, commercial radio has got a particular market that it's trying to serve, and it needs to serve also a particular business model. And it's doing that, and it's doing that successfully. But I think community radio can do is offer that local voice, local concerns, local issues. It also can tap into people's enthusiasms. I have a friend who's involved in the community radio station in Brighton. The sorts of things she's able to do in Brighton, could she do on national radio, on local radio? Possibly. But actually, she would rather do it there. And that's great. You know, it just broadens the range of the whole audio offer. That's why it's good.
So while I've got you, a quick word about the Radio Festival. There was a feeling, I think, in the summer that it might not happen at all. Yeah. Lots of people who worked very hard to make sure there is something for us to go to. In, as you know, in a couple of sentences, briefly if you can, as Steve Hewlett would say, what are the main things you'd pick out that are going to persuade us to part with our money to come?
Somebody said to me the other day, if you look across the 3 days, on the Sunday at the Peel Lecture, you're inspired. On the Monday with TechCon, you celebrate innovation. And on the Tuesday at the showcase, you celebrate creativity.
And it's going to be a bit cheaper than it used to be?
It's going to be a little bit cheaper. It will be slightly smaller because we will be at the British Library. We'll all be in one room, so there aren't going to be the number of breakouts. I think there are some great speakers across the 3 days. You've got Brian Eno. You'll have the Listening Project outside in the British Library. So even if you don't go in, you can come along and take part and see it to a certain extent because the Listening Project will be there. We've got Tony Aggie talking about reinventing the future at TechCon. We've got a great speaker coming over from Africa to talk about the way they've set up a radio station there and the kind of the low cost of technology, which I think is just terrific. On the Tuesday, we've got the likes of Paul Gambaccini speaking. We've also got some great speakers from different areas of audio, such as Google, such as Spotify. So I think it's going to be a real melting pot across the whole of the sector. So I hope sometimes, and you'll have heard this because you've been involved in the radio festival in the past, we've been criticised of being too insular. I think this year we are being as open as we possibly can be, and it will be a celebration of all the creatives across the whole of the landscape.
Good luck and well done on your travails on your bicycle.
Thank you very much.
Just a sentence on how far you got.
We went from Land's End to John O'Groats. It was 960 miles in total. Apparently, we did Everest 1.5 times. On the first day, we got a little bit lost in Cornwall, which is unfortunate, which meant 106 miles, some of which we didn't have to do, and 8,500 feet worth of climbing. But I got to the end, and it was well worth it.
Well, if you can do that, then rescuing the Radio Academy should be a piece of cake.
I don't know about that. Don't know about
Well done, Chris.
Thank you.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. So we're back on the Commercial Radio 40th anniversary trail, and number 14 on the list.
So how is Pennine Radio going to differ from all the other stations on the radio at the moment? Because the dial on your radio is absolutely crammed with them, and they all seem to sound the same. How are you going to differ?
The dial is not crammed in Bradford and West Yorkshire. You've got the four national BBC networks, radios 1, 2, 3 and 4. You've got BBC Radio Leeds. Late at night you've got Luxembourg. I wouldn't call that crammed.
Good morning, this is Pennine Radio. It's 6 o'clock, time for the news.
Happy birthday, Pennine, born this week in the long, hot summer of 75. It's now Pulse. Back in those 70s days, I remember going up and down the medium wave hunting for stations, and at night, at loads of frequencies, you could hear what seemed to be a frightening sound. We thought they were coming for us, didn't we?
This is Radio Moscow, and here is the news. First, the headline. The Soviet Union and Austria have jointly called for the withdrawal of these baby forces from occupied...
Yes, in those Cold War days, Radio Moscow beamed out everywhere.
Radio Moscow can be found on 17 frequencies of 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, 49, and 500 meters. That's 16 frequencies on 13, 16, 19, 25...
And I do mean literally everywhere. Radio Moscow's shortwave transmission network, they say, has never been equaled in transmission power, directivity, or reach. They knew their stuff. Radio Moscow launched this week in 1922. Back in Blighty, it's 35 years this week since a station launched on the south coast. It was housed in a carpet shop.
And thank you very much to the boys at IRN. And a very good morning to you from me, Glenn Richards. It's my pleasure to bring you the very first programme from your local radio station for Hampshire and Dorset, Two Counties Call from 2CR. Now, before I begin, I'd like to pay tribute to the people who've worked so hard and for so long to make this new service possible. They are many, And to them all I say thank you.
2CR launching this week in 1980. It's now Heart. This week in 1946, broadcasting in Europe was putting itself back together again after the war. And Radio Luxembourg prepared for its new future. Its transmitters had been in enemy hands since 1939.
I was to go back to Luxembourg after the war and more or less start broadcasting again in exactly the same way, but on this occasion I would have full cooperation and full assistance and anything I needed over the landline from the BBC. In the meantime, within a few months of my getting back, the Labour government came in under Mr. Attlee, and the next thing that we knew was that Morrison was up in Parliament saying that certain negotiations had been going on in the Grand Duchy in regard to Radio Luxembourg, and they had come to naught because various other countries had intervened.
The beginning of modern-day Radio Luxembourg. Signal Gold launched on AM from Stoke this week in 1992. It later became Signal 2, before becoming Signal Radio, and then Signal Gold, then Signal 2 again, before becoming a Big AM, Signal's Big AM, and Signal 2 again, I think. Meanwhile, outside Broadcasting House 3 years ago, Lord Paton announced George Entwistle as the new BBC Director General.
George has a terrific record, and I'm sure that he'll be a splendid successor to Mark Thompson, who's done such a very good job himself. Over the last few years, so we're really pleased to have selected George, and I know that that sentiment will be echoed throughout this organisation.
George's reign was to last 54 days, just a little shorter than Chris Moyle's reign, which ended this week 3 years ago.
I've said it a million times, I'll say it again. Goodbye and thank you.
The time has sadly come for us to say goodbye. Want to leave you all with a tear in your eye. We've had a lot of fun. We moaned when we were tired. And every single month we came close to being fired. So thanks for tuning in. But now it's time for us to say goodbye.
The final Radio 1 Breakfast Show with Chris Moyles this week in 2012. It's clearly a week of goodbyes in radio history. 2013 now.
Sam, we're getting ready to be up out of here. I definitely want to thank Radio 1 and 1 Extra, Ben and Reese. An incredible blessed life. Shout out to Limlop in the building. Shout out to my new bosses, Richard Park, Gareth Stewart and Al. Looking forward to next Saturday night, 3:11.
Tim Westwood ending his tenure at Radio 1 this week 2 years ago. Has anyone else actually got away with saying hello to their rival station on their existing one? I wonder. So with Brian Matthews celebrating his 87th birthday and still on air.
There I met for the first time this astonishing group called the Beatles.
The death of Derek Jameson from Radio 2 Breakfast and Lates 3 years ago.
Well, it keeps me off the streets, doesn't it?
Capital announcing it was to roll out its brand across the country 5 years ago.
Capital FM.
The death of BBC journalist John Toohey this week last year.
And the economic dilemma confronting the British government.
And Essex Radio launching 34 years ago.
Hi, this is Cliff Richard. Congratulations, Essex Radio.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Well, that was a busy podcast. My thanks, as always, to David Lloyd. Also this week to Chris Burns, Dom Chambers, everyone at Next Radio, especially Matt and James. And, of course, you for listening. This has been a TDC production. We'll have more next week, including details of Omni, which is a fascinating new tool for broadcasters and podcasters. Join me for that if you can. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.